Friends and colleagues from the Transportation Committee here today to receive our report of the 2003 Oregon Highway Cost Allocation Study. And so for that, Dick, do you want to lead us in? Well, you can do it from down there, and that way you can sit. Oh, well, for, Tom Petowski, so Tom, do you have an update on the forecast? Is that why you're...
No, I'm just...
How's it looking for September?
Bad manufacturing numbers, though, yesterday, Mr. Chair.
Stock market's good. All right.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, the highway cost allocation study, essentially this last time, was not contracted out in full, essentially, to a contractor, but was basically... overseen by Tom Petowski in the Office of Economic Analysis, and most of the work was done by the Department of Transportation, and John Maris is primarily responsible for that work, at least at the technical level. And so basically we have Carl Batten from Echo Northwest, who was a contractor in the 2001 study, and has been under contract with ODAP for technical assistance with respect to this study. Carl is here. John will make the main presentation, and Tom will introduce it.
All right, please, come forward. And while you're coming forward, can we get a couple chairs out of... you're working on it. We're working on it. Take a requisition.
Note from the
midnight requisition.
Not at this time.
I'll go get a couple minutes.
All right. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the House Revenue Committee, and guests of the House Revenue Committee. For the record, my name is Tom Petowski, state economist with the Office of Economic Analysis, Department of Administrative Services. Today, I am here as my role as chair of the study review team for the 2003 Oregon Highway Cost Allocation Study. Just some background, starting with the 1999 Highway Cost Allocation Study, the operational management for the study was transferred over to DAS. DAS was requested to ensure an unbiased and scientifically conducted study in an open atmosphere. To that end, the study review team for the 2003 Highway Cost Allocation Study was formed, and on page Roman numeral 4 of the document that is in front of you, you'll see the membership of this study review team. The composition of the committee includes various stakeholders, most notably the Oregon Trucking Association and AAA of Oregon. ODOT is represented, Legislative Revenue Office, and also academics, notably in engineering and in economics. So also to assist in this process, Eco Northwest, providing expertise was Carl Batten, who's in the audience today, was responsible for really building the model used in the 2001 study, which was also used in the 2003 study. We also used their services for consultation on issues that occurred during the study. Now, the study review team does allow the stakeholders to be involved in the study as it unfolds, and they can give consultation through all stages. The role of DAS in this process was to keep the information flow open and accessible, to allow competing viewpoints to be discussed throughout the process. But DAS was not a facilitator or mediator at these meetings. Deal-making or compromises was not our functions. We strive to keep decisions in the model-building area to fit logical and theoretical reasons, given the limitations of time to do the study and data. And I really feel, to that end, we were successful in that process. So that just gives you a quick little background on our role of in this study process. And John Maris, the main lead person conducting the study for ODOT, will give you a presentation on that.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Representative.
I think this is the best news we've heard from Tom in 2 years.
It is.
I'm still going to keep my day job.
We've heard it's been 5 minutes and nothing has changed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, John Maris, ODOT Policy Section Manager. I'd first like to thank Tom and as well as Dick Yates and the other members of the study review team for all the time and work and effort they put in on this process. It's an unpaid position serving on such a committee, and we had some numerous and very extended discussions of all the study methods and issues in the study review team meeting. So, again, I really appreciate the time the SRT members put in on this. I do have a fair amount of number of slides to go through this morning. I would like to go through those fairly quickly because I know you do are under time limitation here and probably have to close to go to floor session at about 10:30. So I will try to move through these fairly quickly.
Okay.
Dick?
Down arrow?
Yeah, down arrow. Oh, I'm sorry, the down arrow. Okay. Wrong direction.
We do the same thing as when something goes wrong, we usually say Dick.
Right. First of all, just a real quick brief history of Oregon road user taxation. I think most of you already know this, but just for the benefit of the members that perhaps don't know, let me cover this very quickly. In 1905, Oregon adopted the first statewide registration fee in the state. It was a $3 one-time fee at that point. That fee was soon annualized, and the fees were increased over the years to provide revenues to roads. In 1919, Oregon became the first state in the nation to enact a gas tax, a gasoline tax, that was set at 1 cent per gallon to begin with. The current tax rate, as you know, is 24 cents per gallon. In 1925, there was a ton-mile tax enacted on heavy trucks and commercial buses. In 1943, the fuel tax was extended to diesel and other fuels. The rate at that point was 5 cents per gallon. Since that point in time, the tax on diesel and other fuels has been at exactly the same rate as the tax on gasoline. Oregon is one of the few states, actually, where that's probably the case. In most states, there's a differential between the tax on gasoline and the tax on diesel. In 1947, the weight mile tax was first enacted. And in 1990, the recommendations of the Task Force on Motor Carrier Taxation were implemented. Probably the principal recommendation there that I might want to mention real quickly was the implementation of the current statutory Table B rates. Those are the rates that apply to vehicles between 80,001 and 105,500 pounds. The rates are graduated by declared gross weight and number of axles. There are separate schedules for 5, 6, 7, 8, and 9 axle vehicles. And the intent there is to explicitly encourage motor carriers to add additional axles to their vehicles. The reason for that is that by spreading any given total load out over additional axles, that truck is doing less pavement damage. You're spreading the load out over more axles and therefore doing less pavement damage. So it's only right they should pay a lower fee if they add additional axles at any given gross weight. Current Oregon road user taxes, I think you know we use a three-tiered structure of fees. The vehicle registration fee, automobiles $15 per year or $30 biennially. The truck registration fees range from $110 to $415 per year at this point. The fuel tax, again, is 24 cents per gallon. The weight mile tax, which applies to all commercial vehicles between 26,001 and 105,500 pounds. Those rates range currently from 3.64 cents per mile to 16.84 cents per mile. The rate at 80,000 pounds is 11.97, or roughly 12 cents per mile. And 80,000 pounds, as I think you know, is by far the largest truck weight class in terms of miles of travel and revenue contributions and cost responsibilities. So that's kind of the benchmark weight group as far as trucks go. There are optional flat fee rates for certain commodities, specifically log haulers, sand and gravel haulers, and wood chip haulers. They have the option to pay monthly flat fees in lieu of the mileage tax. There is also a road use assessment fee, which applies to single-trip non-divisible loads over 98,000 pounds. Non-divisible load permits, I think most of you know, are permits that are issued for the transportation of very heavy loads which cannot be broken apart. Things like bridge beams, electrical transformers, very heavy construction equipment, that sort of thing. What is cost responsibility? Cost responsibility is apportioning the cost of highway work to the highway user classes based on the expenditures for which each class is responsible. It is, therefore, the implementation of the fundamental user pay policy of the state of Oregon. And Oregon has based its system of highway finance on this principle for some 65 years now, going back to 1937 when the first cost responsibility or cost allocation study was conducted. We have conducted, prior to the present study, 12 studies, the first in 1937. The most recent before the current study was the 2001 study. And as Tom mentioned, Carl Batten from Eco Northwest was probably the principal consultant that worked on that 2001 study, as well as offering us a good deal of assistance in the current 2003 study. The results of the studies are used to recommend adjustments in tax rates to you folks, to the legislature. Highway users, motorists, and truckers are involved in an open and objective process as the studies are conducted. For the current study and the last couple studies, for example, DAS formed a study review team, which Tom has already referred to. That team consisted of representatives of motorists, AAA truckers. We had some academics on there, some state officials such as Tom and Dick Yates. We had a couple professor from Oregon State University on there, so it was a pretty high level, I think, study review team, and we had some very extensive discussions in the SRT meetings. As Dick mentioned previously, the current study was largely conducted by ODOT staff with limited consultant assistance and with direction from DAS and oversight of the study by DAS. Cost responsibility is now a constitutional requirement. Oregon Constitution, Article 9, Section 3A3. The wording for that constitutional amendment, by the way, is spelled out on page 1 of the study report. Major data elements of a cost allocation study, there's basically four. First of all, the traffic data by vehicle class and road system. Secondly, the expenditure program data by major category and individual work type. Third, the engineering data and the methods used to assign the expenditures to the various vehicle classes. And fourth, the revenue data by revenue source, tax, or fee type. Let me talk just very briefly a little bit more about each one of those, at least the traffic data, the expenditure data, and the revenue data elements. Vehicle miles of travel, VMT, is the primary measure of use of the highway system. There are a number of variations of vehicle miles of travel, which I'll talk about in just a minute, but that is the primary measure of system use. We develop estimates of vehicle miles of travel by registered or declared and actual operating weight class and by each individual highway system which is used in the study. The reason we do that is that the tax rates are based in terms of registered or declared weight, in terms of the weight mile tax. The actual allocation of the expenditures in the study model, though, is based on the actual operating weight distribution of the trucks in each declared weight or registered weight class. We do use six different highway systems, interstate urban, interstate rural, other state urban, other state rural, county roads, and city streets. The reason we do that is because the traffic, the level, and particularly the mix of traffic varies widely between the different highway systems. Light vehicles, defined as those vehicles with gross weights up to 8,000 pounds, and heavy vehicles, defined as vehicles with gross weights above 8,000 pounds, contribute very different shares of the total traffic on these six different highway systems. For example, on rural interstate routes, trucks account for, heavy vehicles account for over 20% of the travel, 20% of the miles of travel. By the time you get down to city streets, trucks and other heavy vehicles account for only about 3% of the total traffic. And also the mix of truck traffic, is, as you probably know, is different between the different systems. When you're talking about interstate routes, you're talking primarily about five and more axle trucks, your typical 18-wheelers and above. by the time you get down to city streets, the truck traffic there, you're not going to see too many five-axle rigs on the typical city street. But what you are going to see primarily is two-axle delivery vehicles, perhaps a three-axle dump trucks, three-axle garbage trucks, perhaps an occasional four- or five-axle truck. But it's primarily the lighter truck weight classes that you're going to see on the city streets. So that's the reason we use six different road systems, and there are separate traffic estimates developed for each one of those six systems in the model. Again, there are two primary classes of vehicles, light vehicles, 8,000 pounds or less, and heavy vehicles, 8,001 pounds and over. There are some other relative use measures which are used to allocate some of the expenditures in the studies, passenger car equivalent weighted vehicle miles of travel, for example, or PCEVMT. Passenger car equivalents are a measure of the effective roadway space occupied by any vehicle as compared to a standard passenger car. So if a typical truck has a PCE factor, for example, of 4, that means that effectively it's occupying it's taking up 4 times the effective space on the roadway that a standard passenger car is. And so passenger car equivalent weighted vehicle miles of travel is a very logical allocator than we think for expenditures which are undertaken to expand the capacity of the highway system, adding an additional lane, for example, that at least the common responsibility portion of those expenditures would logically be allocated by PCEVMT. Axle miles of travel are vehicle miles of travel weighted by number of axles on the vehicles. So again, trucks will tend to account for about twice the share of axle miles of travel as they do vehicle miles of travel. Axle miles of travel are a logical allocator, we believe, for the cost of, for example, pavement striping and marking, because the wear of pavement striping and marking is primarily the result of the number of wheel passes which are applied to the striping and marking. So when it comes to allocating those expenditures to replace the pavement striping and marking, again, axle miles of travel is a very logical allocator to apportion those costs among the vehicle classes. Load equivalence factor weighted vehicle miles of travel. Load equivalence factors are a measure, an engineering measure, of the amount of stress applied to pavements by vehicles of any given weight as compared to a standard vehicle. They essentially measure how much pavement damage, how much pavement stress is imposed by axles of different weights. So LEF weighted VMT is therefore a very logical allocator to with respect to pavement costs. And most pavement costs in the Oregon studies, as well as the studies conducted by the federal government and other states, are now use load equivalence factor weighted vehicle miles of travel to allocate those costs. Trucks, by the way, are responsible for a good portion of the load equivalence factor weighted vehicle miles of travel, so they are apportioned a good share of the cost for pavement expenditures. About 64% of the total pavement expenditures in the current study were found to be the responsibility of trucks and other heavy vehicles, and about 36% light vehicles. A little bit more on the program data. What we used in the current study was projected state plus local government expenditures from all funding sources. That includes state, federal, and local for the 2003-05 biennium analysis period. The 2003 cost allocation study was the first study in which we have included all expenditures, both not only the state expenditures, but also the federal expenditures on roads in Oregon, plus local expenditures funded from local revenue sources, such as property taxes, local fuel taxes, this sort of thing. All studies prior to the current study had included only state highway fund or expenditures financed by state highway fund revenues. So this is a major departure in the 2003 study as compared to previous studies. And I'll talk a little bit more about that in just a minute. Major expenditure categories, there are four. First of all, modernization, which is new construction and reconstruction. Secondly, preservation or rehabilitation. Third, maintenance and operations. And fourth, administration, collection, and other program costs. Now, within each of these broad categories, there are a number of individual work types, and each one of those individual work types is allocated separately. For example, under maintenance and operations, there are 16 individual work types, ranging all the way from pothole patching to maintenance of rest areas to maintenance of bridges to litter pickup along roadways, mowing and brush cutting, sanding and snow and ice removal. A wide range of different activities are included under that general major category. And each one of those is allocated somewhat differently as between cars and trucks as far as the expenditures. So in other words, these are the four main expenditure categories, but they do conceal quite a bit of detail. There are a number of individual work types within each of those major categories. Allocation of expenditures. In terms of the way expenditures are allocated in the study, there are basically three types of expenditures. First of all, those that are a function of vehicle size or gross weight or axle weight. This would include pavement expenditures, bridge expenditures, interchange costs. Any type of cost where there is a relationship which can be demonstrated that heavier axle or gross weight vehicles occasion or cause additional cost. In other words, the cost of constructing a bridge, for example, for light vehicle traffic only, it's going to be less than the cost of constructing that bridge for all traffic, including both cars and trucks, because the bridge does have to be built somewhat stronger to support the heavy loads imposed by the trucks. So the basic cost might be, just to pick a number, might cost, say, 70% of the total cost of constructing the bridge if that bridge was constructed only for light vehicle traffic and constructed to be strong enough to hold itself up and to withstand things like potential seismic forces, wind loads, stream flow, this sort of thing. So 70% of the cost in that case would be considered a common responsibility of all road users, and apportioned probably by the relative vehicle miles of travel of each weight class. The remaining 30% of the cost in that case would be allocated to the heavy vehicle classes only, because they are the ones that are causing that additional 30% increase in the cost. The second type of main type of expenditure is those expenditures which are a unique responsibility of a particular vehicle type or class. Things like the expense of registering cars at DMV. Obviously, that's a cost which we're going to assign only to the cars and other light vehicles. Studded tire damage repair, another item which is allocated or assigned only to cars, because with very rare exceptions, trucks do not use studded tires. So any damage and the expenditures to repair that damage that result from studded tires is a cost which is allocated strictly to cars. Truck escape ramps, obviously this is the case where this is something which is provided only for the truck, so this is the cost which would be allocated strictly to the truck classes. The third main type of expenditure is those expenditures which are judged to be a common responsibility. These are referred to as common cost, is often the term that's used, but they're costs which are a common responsibility of all vehicle classes. Things like general administrative expenses, things like roadside cleanup and mowing, provision and maintenance of traffic signs and signals. Those type of expenditures where there is not a clear, demonstrable relationship between the expenditure on the item and vehicle weight or size. Things which, again, are judged to be a common responsibility of all road users. These expenditures actually account for a fair proportion of the costs which are allocated in a typical highway cost allocation study. Revenue data used in the current study was forecasted 2003-05 biennium collections by major state revenue source under existing tax structure and current law tax rates. The major revenue sources, of course, are the fuel tax, which is by far the largest. Secondly, the weight mile tax. Third, registration fees, title fees, flat fees, other motor carrier fees, which would include things like permit fees paid by truckers, truck overload, overweight violation fees, this sort of thing. And then finally, the road use assessment fee, which applies to vehicles operated above 98,000 pounds, hauling single-trip non-divisible loads. The revenue amounts, by the way, which correspond to those major revenue sources, are listed in Exhibit 4-6 on page 37 of the report, so you can get some idea of the magnitude there. As you can see, the fuel taxes account for about 55% of the total revenues coming into the state highway fund. weight mile taxes for about 26%, registration fees about 11.5%, and other items in there account for smaller percents of the total. The grand total in terms of the revenues allocated in, or attributed in the 2003 study was about $713 million. Now, that is about a little bit over 3% higher than the comparable amount attributed in the previous 2001 study. However, I should mention that the 2001 study did not break out title fees as a separate revenue source because the title fees at that point were low enough that they simply covered the cost, as I understand it at least, they covered the cost of issuing the title fee, the titles. So because they were essentially a wash in terms of revenues, they were not included as a separate revenue source in the 2001 study. Now, with the increase in those fees enacted by the 2001 legislature, they're now at a level where they are generating, of course, net revenues, and so we did break those out as a separate revenue source in the current study. And that's really the only reason for an increase in the revenue projections in the current study as compared to the previous study. The other items, the fuel taxes, weight mile, registration, flat fees, other motor carrier and road use assessment fee revenues are on balance actually lower than the projections made in the previous study. And a good part of this reflects the economic downturn and the fact that's particularly hit hard is on the trucking industry and commercial truck activity within the state. The basic approach of the study is, first of all, to allocate projected expenditures or responsibilities to vehicle classes. Secondly, to attribute projected revenues or tax payments to the vehicle classes. And then third, once you've gone through those first two steps, then to calculate equity ratios, which compare the revenue contributions from each class to the responsibilities of that particular class. A ratio of less than one, by definition, indicates that the vehicles in that particular class are paying less than their responsibility, or projected, rather, to pay less than their responsibility. An equity ratio of exactly one means that that class is paying exactly its fair share. Revenues contributed by that class are exactly equal to the responsibilities of that class. A ratio greater than one indicates that the vehicles in that class are overpaying their cost responsibility. Now, equity ratios can be computed for each 2,000-pound gross weight class of heavy vehicles, for example, or they can also be computed for broader groups of vehicles, like light vehicles versus heavy vehicles as a whole. And that's the primary emphasis of the current study is on the kind of those broader groupings of vehicles as far as the calculation of the equity ratios go. A little bit about the 2003 study process, and Dick and Tom have already touched on this somewhat, so I won't spend a lot of time on this, go over very quickly. A work on the study did begin in November 2001. There were 10 study review team meetings held the first in November of 2001. The final one was January 27th of 2003 of this year. There were 8 meetings held during 2002, so for a total of 10. There were 10 methodology issue papers and 3 discussion papers prepared for the SRT meetings on various methodology issues that might be faced in doing the study. For example, one discussion paper was on possible methods for allocating pavement costs, another was on possible methods for allocating bridge costs, and so on. We did also prepare 5 matrices comparing the allocation methods proposed for the current study with those used in the 1992, 99, and 2001 studies. And those were discussed extensively at the study review team meetings, particularly the ones in 2002. In addition, we did prepare several additional background materials for those SRT meetings. And again, those generated a good deal of discussion at the meetings they were presented at. Major changes from the 2001 study, by far the major change, as I mentioned already, is the allocation of all highway expenditures anticipated for the 2003-05 biennium, regardless of funding source. As I mentioned before, all previous Oregon studies had allocated expenditures only from state highway fund revenues. Because of the impacts of the federal advanced construction program, which basically allows us to program federal funds more quickly than we otherwise would be able to do and get the work on those construction projects started more quickly. And because of the department's very aggressive move to try to quote unquote, federalize as much of the construction program as possible. We are in a position now where, for the next couple biennia at least, a good part of the construction program, modernization and preservation expenditures, in other words, by ODOT, will be federally funded. And so that created a real problem in terms of an issue to address in the study. If we did not include those federal funds, then the feeling was, I think, in the majority of the study review team members, that we would be presenting a very biased picture of the overall expenditure program for the state over the next biennium. So a decision was made then to include the federal expenditures as well as the state expenditures. It was also felt that if we were going to do that, though, in fairness to the trucking industry, we really needed also to include all local expenditures, not only the local expenditures funded from state highway funded portions, but also the expenditures which they fund from their own revenue sources. So again, this was the first study this has ever been done, and I assume from this point on we will probably continue this practice, although this may be an issue for discussion at the beginning of the process for the next study. We did use a new bridge cost allocation study. The allocation of bridge costs in the previous couple studies was based on a study which was first done by our bridge section staff clear back in 1986. It was updated in 1992, but the feeling still was, or was still, that that study was pretty much outdated by this point, and therefore we needed some a new study of the cost responsibility for bridges. So we asked our bridge section staff to do that. They didn't have the resources internally to do that, so they did contract it out to an Oregon bridge engineering consulting firm located in Eugene. And they produced a report, which then we used in determining the responsibility for bridge expenditures in the study. We did, this time around, we spent a lot of time on the issue of bridge replacements, as you can well imagine, and whether the trucks and heavy vehicles should be assigned a somewhat higher percentage of the cost for bridge replacements than for totally new bridges. The approach which we finally ended up taking in the end, which is described in Chapter 3 of the report, does allocate some additional cost to trucks and other heavy vehicles for bridge replacements as compared to the comparable amount which they would be allocated for totally new bridges. The feeling there was that the trucks and other heavy vehicles have made at least some contribution to the need for bridge replacements. Have accelerated the need for those replacements. This is an issue which admittedly is open to a lot of discussion, a lot of debate. There's still a lot of disagreement, as I think probably all of you know, on this particular issue. And there is additional research going on right now which we hope will shed additional light on this issue before we get around to doing the next 2005 study. There's a study by Oregon State University researchers in particular that is going to be looking, one of the things they're going to be looking at in that study is the causes of the cracked bridges problem which we have currently in the state of Oregon. So I think the approach we used in the current study was the best approach we could use at this particular time. It probably did not go nearly as far as some folks would like in terms of assigning a majority of bridge replacement costs to heavy vehicles. It probably went farther than a lot of people would like in terms of assigning at least some additional responsibility for bridge replacement costs to heavy vehicles. But anyway, I think it was the best approach we could come up with at this point. And if the results of the further research that are being done and will be done over the next couple of years would indicate that the approach we used in the current study was not the best approach, then certainly we will argue very strongly for a revised allocation of those costs in future studies. We also had our design folks do an updated interchange cost responsibility study because, again, that study we felt was somewhat outdated. It went back also to 1986 with an update in 1992. But we did ask our design folks to go back and redo that study. The essential conclusion there was they came out was that for new and rebuilt interchanges, cars and other light vehicles should be responsible for about 73% of the total cost of those interchanges, trucks and other heavy vehicles about 27%. So that's how those particular costs break down. We did use a somewhat lower total for studded tire damage repair expenditures than had been used in the previous couple studies. The figure we used this time was $9.2 million annually. The figure used in the last couple studies was $11 million. We think that's probably actually a better number than the number used in the last couple studies. I think it's probably more reasonable given the increased use in Oregon of the new lighter weight aluminum and therefore less damaging studs on studded tires. So that damage amount is probably going down, and therefore the expenditures to repair that damage are also going down somewhat. That, again, is the cost which is assigned only to cars and light vehicles. Major findings of the 2003 study. Overall, light vehicles, again, 1 to 8,000 pounds, were found to be responsible for 66.6% of the overall expenditures for the coming biennium. And trucks and other heavy vehicles, 8,001 pounds and over, responsibility share is 33.4. So just about a very close to two-thirds, one-third, which I think you probably, you've seen reference to this in some of the newspaper articles and so on. Very close to two-thirds, one-third responsibility shares. It is projected that light vehicles will pay 66.1% and heavy vehicles 33.9% of the total highway fund revenue collections for the next biennium under the existing current law tax rate. Mm-hmm. So you put those two things together and you compute the equity ratios. The overall equity ratios computed were 0.992 for light vehicles and 1.016 for heavy vehicles. What that means is that for the next biennium, with no change in existing tax rates, light vehicles are projected as a whole, are projected to underpay their responsibility by 0.8%. And heavy vehicles as a whole, all vehicles above 8,001 pounds, are projected to overpay their responsibility by 1.6%. That's what the equity ratios mean. We also found that under the existing tax rates and fees, some heavy vehicle weight classes are projected to overpay their responsibility and some to underpay. Most of the vehicle classes between about 32,000 pounds and 80,000 pounds are projected to overpay their responsibility during the next biennium under the existing weight mile tax rates. Most of the vehicles, I think with the exception of vehicles in one class, most of the vehicles above 80,000 pounds are projected to underpay their responsibility over the next biennium by varying amounts, and those are detailed in Exhibit 6-1 of the report on page 51 of the study report. I understand the numbers are a little small and hard to read, but
there's Greenlee had a question.
Can I ask a question on that? On that exhibit you're talking about now on page 51, is that 6.1 on page 51? The very heavy vehicles seem to really significantly underpay, with ratios of 0.75 down to 0.26 or something, 2.7. Is that a concern? Was that a concern among the trucking industry itself? I mean, it doesn't affect the balance significantly, but the share among those vehicles is really very different. Did that come out to be a problem?
Mr. Chair, Representative Greenlee, I think that was a concern, but I should point out also, and it's pointed out in the study report, that those results for the very heavy vehicles, for the ones above 105,500 pounds in particular, are a little misleading because the way the computer model is currently constructed, it is not possible to attribute any registration fee revenues to those vehicles above 105,500 pounds. If that was possible, then those ratios would tend to come up somewhat for those vehicles. The registration fees paid by those vehicles are attributed to the class in which they normally operate, which, you know, 80,000 pounds or perhaps 105,500. But it's not possible to attribute any registration fee revenues to the vehicles above 105.5. If it was possible, then those ratios would come up somewhat.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Can I interrupt again?
Sure.
Yes. Let's see. Now, if I read this right, then the heaviest vehicles are only paying 76% of what they should be paying. Is that correct?
My heaviest vehicles, you're referring to?
Yeah, 104,000 pounds.
Yes.
Correct.
Is that correct?
Yes, Mr. Chair, Representative Gilman, that is correct. That was the finding of the study.
On the bridge, another question.
Mm-hmm, sure.
On the bridge study that the people in Eugene did, we have a lot of cracking bridges built in the 60s. Did they allocate cause to that of overweight vehicles by any chance?
What, Mr. Chair, Representative Gilman, what the consultants did basically in their analysis was simply to look at typical designs for three different types of bridges, for three different types of new bridges. That's pretty much what the consultants did. And yes, they did factor, certainly, they certainly did factor in weight in terms of the calculations which they made for the cost of new bridges. We then took that a step further in the study review team did, and again after extensive discussion in the meetings with respect to the replaced bridge expenditures. We decided to take the results from the consultant report and then alter those somewhat to allocate a higher percent of the cost to heavy vehicles for the replaced bridges as compared to a comparable totally new bridge. And again, this is based on the belief, at least on the part of some people, that the heavy trucks have contributed, perhaps at least accelerated the need in some cases for those bridge replacements. Are heavy vehicles totally responsible for the bridge replacement situation in Oregon? I don't think so, personally. I'm not a bridge engineer, but I don't think they are. But have they played some? Probably. There's a multitude of factors which have led to the current.
Dick, did you want to weigh in?
Yeah, I guess as a study review team member, the reason I bought in on that was not that argument, because I don't buy that argument. But the argument is that once you replace a bridge, the life of that bridge is reduced if you allow heavy vehicle traffic on the bridge. And so, therefore, it increases it has a higher responsibility for the cost of replacing the bridge, because you lose that tail end which would be available to automobiles if only light vehicle traffic were allowed on the bridge.
Mm. Thank you, Dick. That perhaps is a better way of looking at it.
Okay. Representative Mabry.
I don't have a problem with where this is allocated, but looking at your table, if I'm looking at it correctly, the trucks in the 72 to 74,000 pound range pay 210% of their allocated costs, and the trucks in the 90 to 92,000 pound pay 61% of their allocated costs. How do you get those truckers from shooting at you when they travel down the road? I mean, it seems like that in itself would create a conflict in the trucking industry. And I don't know how you get those closer, but.
Well, Mr. Chair, Representative Mabry,
shooting at each other was tongue in cheek, but is it a matter of needing to adjust registration fees or things like that for the truckers to bring those closer to a one-on-one ratio, or is it just something that system is the way it is and you live with it?
Well, again, Mr. Chair, Representative Mabry, I probably Bob Russell of the Trucking Association is a better person to address that question, but there will always be some of those types of imbalances within the individual 2,000 pound truck weight classes, certainly. And but it ultimately it comes back to the decision on the part of you folks as to whether you choose to implement the detailed results or simply to implement the results on a more aggregated level. Keep in mind also that there aren't a lot of miles, I don't believe, in either one of those two weight classes which you specifically mentioned. So there's not a lot of trucks or miles of travel involved in either one of those classes. And that may, in fact, be part of the reason why you're seeing those ratios swing quite a bit for those types of classes where there are just a few miles, a few million miles in those, as compared to the 80,000-pound class where there's over a billion miles of travel in that one class alone.
Thank you.
I guess constitutionally our charge is to maintain the balance between light and heavy, and it's more in the detail as to the breakdown between the increments, especially in the trucking categories, that we're not constitutionally charged to maintain equity within those categories, but it's in the broader category, isn't that right, between light and heavy?
Mr. Chair, that is exactly right.
Yeah.
Mr. Chair, thank you, Mr. Chair. My question is regarding steel studs. If we ban steel studs, you say we'd only save about $10 million a year?
Well, let me back up a step here. What we allocate in the study is expenditures to repair studded tire damage. We do not attempt to allocate the actual cost of studded tire damage. In other words, we look at only what we, ODOT, and the counties and the cities will be spending over the next biennium to repair that damage which has already occurred. So we're not actually allocating the actual cost of the damage. Now, there have been numerous...
A quick follow-up. A guess, could you guess what damage is done by steel studs?
Representative Zahn, there have been numerous studies over the years which have tried to pin that down, and the amounts have ranged anywhere from, you know, about $15 million per year up to as high as $45 or $50 million per year.
Yeah. I would think it's difficult to pinpoint.
It is very difficult to pinpoint.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
But again... What we do in the studies is allocate only the expenditure to repair the damage, not the actual cost.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
We kind of sidestep that issue, I guess. And,
so you don't measure the cost, the unrepaired portion of damage caused by other times.
Right. Given the overall imbalance between light and heavy vehicles as a whole, found by the current study. In other words, the equity ratios are 0.992 and 1.016. What could be done in terms of increasing light, pose the question a little differently. How do you get back in balance? What is the best way to get back in balance? Well, it turns out there's an infinite number of ways to get back in balance. I mean, you can raise one side a little bit, you can lower the other side a little bit, or any number of combinations of those two things. What I've addressed on this particular slide here is simply three possible methods for getting back in balance. Now, this would be in the absence of a funding package, a transportation package, or as a beginning point for discussions of a funding package. First of all, given the results of the current study, you could increase light vehicle revenues and reduce heavy vehicle revenues by equal amounts. In this case, it would be about $3.6 million. That would leave revenues, at least from full fee-paying vehicles, constant, and restore the payment shares to the cost responsibility shares. Or a second approach would be to increase light vehicle revenues by about $10.8 million annually, leaving heavy vehicle payments constant. A third option would be to reduce heavy vehicle payments by approximately $5.4 million per year, leaving light vehicle payments constant. So again, these options are all equally valid ways of balancing to the new cost responsibility results, and there's nothing about highway cost allocation studies that would say one approach is better than another. Really, the issue comes down to revenue sufficiency, and in terms of the discussions with respect to a funding package, which, of course, has been going on for the last several months, it doesn't make a lot of difference. I think any one of these options is going to get you to the same point in the end, approximately. So, but I did want to point out there are various ways.
Dick,
yeah. Yeah, I just wanted to say that in terms of the bill that was just passed out of the Transportation Committee, or the one that we'll get early next week, the third approach is conceptually the approach that was used in adjusting the balance of revenues from light and heavy vehicles could bring us back into cost responsibility.
Right.
I hate to press this along, but if we could get to your next slide, which I think is your concluding thoughts, we could hear those and then adjourn to the floor. Let me just ask, we got some backbenchers here. Do any of you want to be heard, or are you here mostly for your own information? Did any of you want to speak to the committee on this? You're not advocating for any changes. I want to make that clear. I'm seeing some heads nodding. No. I mean, you're agreeing with me. One was heading... as a lawyer, I should know better than to ask ambiguous questions like that. Okay. I wanted to make sure, because if you were, then we would reschedule some more testimony on this. But if you're satisfied just to have heard this, well, then we'll conclude with your thoughts and go to the floor.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Very quickly, some concluding thoughts on cost responsibility. This is the final slide. The studies do use an analytical engineering-based approach to provide an objective assessment of responsibilities by vehicle class for the next biennium. The studies, at least the way we do them in Oregon, use a forward-looking approach to determine projected responsibilities for the next biennium. What we always concentrate on in these studies is the next biennium. We do not try to go back and assess responsibility for previous biennia. We could do that, and some in the studies in some other states have done that. They've looked at both historical and projected expenditures. In Oregon, we've traditionally taken simply a forward-looking approach. And finally, of course, the legislature, you folks, are the ones that decide how the study results and recommendations will be implemented. You are the ultimate decision makers on this.
Okay.
So.
Perfect. Thank you very much for the Transportation Committee. This is sort of a retrospective for the revenue. This is a introduction because we will be looking at adjustments in the allocation and the transportation packages coming forward. So we'll just have this in mind as information for, as background for that.
Mr.
With that,
Chair,
Representative,
thank you for inviting us. To
we're happy to have you. You were nice enough to invite us to your party last week, so we're glad to have you down here. Welcome. Good to have you here. We're probably about half the quorum, so let's get on up to the floor. Committee, we are adjourned, and I want to thank you both for coming in today.
Stingy.